I was with you. I thought Cowboys were headed to the Super Bowl.
Hey, we're still headed to the Super Bowl if you ask me. Okay?
I'll say they're not out. They're not out yet. But if you can't beat the winner of the NFC East last year, the Washington football teams, and they're decimated by being the Washington football team.
I don't really give credit to teams for beating teams that they should beat. You know, the Washington football team, you're supposed to beat them. They're not a good football team. I'm sorry to all the fans out here. They're not a good football team. What's up, Take Liners? No, you are not still hungover from New Year's Eve. Jason and Renee are off this week, but don't go anywhere because you are still getting a full episode of Take Line today, hosted by myself, Ashley Nicole Moss, and
me, Brandon Newman. That's right. You know, Brandon Newman from Barstool Sports, co-host of the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast with Joy Taylor. Shout out. And now producer, social media guy for NBC's Brother from Another. And if you didn't know, I played football at the University of Notre Dame, defensive lineman, 2012's Scout Team Player of the Year. That was my senior year, but who's watching?
And it's your girl, Ashley Nicole Moss from Sports Illustrated, SNY TV, and co-host of Certified Buckets. But look, that's enough of all the credentials and the talk and the chat, because we know our shit and we know you people came here for a good time. And that's what we're going to give you, a good time. So let's get started.
Amen.
All right, Brandon. So 2022 in the NFL started off with a bang. It's like we couldn't even get one day of just calm football to start off the year after the crazy year that we had, because Bucs wide receiver Antonio Brown left MetLife Stadium before the game ended. Again, before the game ended, in what seemed like just an explosion of frustration, he took off his pads, took off his shirt, threw all of it into the stands. Twitter and NFL media had a field day afterwards. And then head coach Bruce Arians said that AB, and I quote, is no longer a Buck. That was the full statement. He is no longer a Buck. Doesn't want to talk about him. He is no longer a Buck. So just in terms of straight football analysis, because again, everyone has their opinions. Everyone thinks they're a doctor on Twitter or a scientist or all that stuff. What is just your view on this entire AB situation after what happened on Sunday? Because I don't think I've ever seen something that intense actually happen in the court. You hear about things like in the locker room or at halftime, or, you know, when the teams are loading on the buses, but not in like the middle of a game. Like the teams were still on the field. They were on the field.
The offense was on the field for the Bucs. He was supposed to have his shoulder pads on and be on the field. Instead, he had everything off, waving to the crowd as he went away. Listen, you talked about how we've never seen anything like this before. This was the most selfish thing that we've seen out of any NFL football team. This is a team game, football, where we need everyone. He quit on the team. He quit on Tom Brady. He quit on Bruce Arians. All these people that gave him a bunch of second chances. And for whatever reasons, I'm hearing whispers that he thought he was too injured to go back in the game. And that somebody said that he's supposed to go back in the game. And Bruce Arians said, you can go ahead and get your shit and get out of here, which AB did. But my thing is, AB is, what's Denny Green quote? They are who we thought they were. He is who we thought he was. This is the same type of activity you would see from somebody who would go live after AFC championship game on Instagram and put Mike Tomlin's business all out in the street. Like, that was a no-no. What do they say? Cocaine's a hell of a drug. Fame's a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
Ever since he became AB, ever since he graduated from Antonio Brown draft pick for the Steelers know the wide receiver picks and the best thing that came out of the MAC, Central Michigan. When he became AB and got that B chain, he became a whole other rock star that can't be controlled. And my problem is he single-handedly put himself out of the running for ever being a Hall of Famer, which is the biggest honor that you have as an NFL player.
Which is a travesty, because you can say a lot about AB. You can't say that he's not a hell of a football player, a hell of a talent. I think there's a lot to unpack here. I think for starters, I mean, Tom Brady's response to, you know, the media after the game is very telling, because he basically said, and this is not a direct quote, that we should offer AB compassion. So that just means to me that there's something that we don't know about. And if anyone knows it, it's Tom Brady. I mean, this is somebody who fought for him to be on this team. And not only that, but AB was living with Brady at one point. So right. if anybody knows what he's dealing with outside of the game of football, it's Brady. So I think that's telling. I think it's also very important for people to not armchair diagnose Antonio Brown. Nobody, like I said, is a doctor or a scientist. We don't know what's going on with him. I do think it is very telling also that if it is true that AB, you know, and you played football, so you know this, a lot of times you'll have an injury, but you try to ignore it and play through it, right? Right. At the end of the day, these guys want to play football or sports in general. You're a competitor, you want to play. But sometimes your body gets the best of you and it tells you, look, you can't continue. So if AB did tell his coach or his coaches, like, look, I can't give you anymore. I just don't have it. And that was the reaction, like either play or get the hell out of here. That's also another conversation because that's very concerning from a coaching staff that is supposed right. to look out for the betterment of their players. Now, again, there's two sides to every story and then there's the truth, right? It's usually mm-hmm. bits and pieces of both sides. But I think that reaction, it's not like, you know, they just said, oh, we're not going to put you in this play. You're going to have to see. And he just lost. I think there's more to it. And I think we have to be quick to not chastise him because of past behavior too.
Right. Right. And obviously we're not trying to diagnose anyone. We don't have any doctoral degrees, but
I just play one on TV sometimes. Yeah.
Listen, the Bucks were down
right
to the New York Jets in New York. And their main weapon going into the game, Chris Godwin, not to make a big switch over into the X and O's of the game, but Antonio Brown was their number one receiver going into that game because mm-hmm. we lost Chris Godwin. And obviously we need him. He had a couple catches in that game. Third quarter, at that point in time in the game, you have to know that football and the team is bigger than you. It's bigger than whatever conversation Bruce Arians had with you. It's bigger than whatever conversation the coaches, whatever strife he has. Mike Evans went over there and tried to calm dude down. Like, RIP to John Madden. I wish I had a telestrator of John Madden's, like, okay, you see, AB is going mad. He's taking his shoulder pads
the
off.
The yellow marker.
Mike Evans is trying to tell him, cool. Then he throws his gloves and his shirts into the stands. Like, AB is extremely selfish, and I guess I feel offended that he let his team down more than anything.
I think the selfish thing comes into play on how he left. Again, if he was unable to play because of an injury, they're saying it's his ankle. If that was the case, and Bruce Arians did say, look, you either play or you get the hell out of here. I don't know if that was the direct quote, but I'm just saying for dramatic effect.
Right.
You know, AB could have left without causing a scene. The way he left was selfish. You know, if you were unable to participate, if you were unable to contribute, and that was the ultimatum you were given, then leave. Don't be a distraction to the team in the middle of a play. This is not at halftime. This is not during a timeout. There was a game going on, like literally a possession going on.
Yeah.
And all you did was just cause an unnecessary distraction to your team. I understand you kind of prioritizing yourself and your health first. I think any player should do that in that situation. If you say, even if you're an employer, you say, hey, look, I don't feel well. And they're like, well, either you work or you quit. Okay, then bye. Like, you know what I mean? But there's a way to do it. And I think that the way he did it, again, is just another strike against him in a character trait of being selfish. There's a lot of things that AB has done in his career that just come across very me first. And this Absolutely. Was just another strike against him. And it's unfortunate because the reason that he left may be legitimate, but it's kind of distracted or it's covered by all the antics that you did on your way out, you know?
Right. Yeah. And the me first thing, was it 2 weeks ago? Fake vaccination card? Like, how me first can you get? And that's why I think it's less about mental health, in my opinion, and more about character for Antonio Brown, because he does what he's always doing. And Tom Brady needed him. That's why he got so many second chances. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers wanted to repeat. They got everybody, first team to get all 11 starters on both sides of the ball to re-sign again. They were trying to run it back. You know, Tom Brady wants to win another Super Bowl, obviously. And at the end of that game, what do we see? Tom Brady threw a pass to Rashad Perriman, of all people, to win the game. Like, Tom Brady would like Antonio Brown. but he doesn't need Antonio Brown. And the Bucs don't need this distraction. That's why Bruce Arians is taking the heat that he's taking, because he said, oh, this is the last chance for AB. So, oh, he's back and we got somebody injured. Okay, well, maybe one more chance for AB. And now he's got egg on his face for not standing up for what was right in the moment. But I think this is a complete distraction for a huge game, MVP statement game for Tom Brady.
Yeah,
and now we're just talking about Antonio Brown.
Well, the full quote from Bruce Arians is, he is no longer a Buck. And then the continuation is, that's the end of the story. Let's talk about the guys that went out there and won the game. And also, AB did not fly home on the team charter. And then that's another layer of this story. He took a private car service. Initially, people thought it was an Uber. It wasn't an Uber. It was a private car service that, you know, the driver works with other athletes as well.
Danny Boy Hustle
and they're, yeah, then they're on like Instagram Live and just don't even know where they're going. It looks like they're on like the adventures of Harold and Kumar. Like, I have no idea what's happening.
New York.
It was just very odd. And again, that just goes ahead and just speaks to the me first kind of mentality. When, if AB is in the right in this situation, when it comes to the underlining layer of Bruce right. Arians giving him that very terrible ultimatum, when your player's coming to you and saying, look, I can't do it. I can't give you anymore. If that is the case and that is the true story, it's kind of negated by everything that you did, because had you left with some dignity and said, you know what, I'm just going to leave, and then this story comes out,
right?
Bruce Arians looks like the bad guy. But right. because you left like a maniac and it was very, ooh, look at me, look at me, look at me, you're jumping up and down shirtless in the end zone and all that stuff. Now it's like, okay, yeah, what Bruce Arians did is ugly. But look what you did, AB. Like, you lose your box to stand on, if you will.
Right.
It just, oh, it looks messy.
Yeah, it's completely messy. But that is AB's brand, unfortunately. I mean, think about why he got pushed out of Tom Brady's old home with the Patriots. Like, that was a very short-lived stint with the New England Patriots because AB's messy. The vaccination card came out because he didn't pay his personal chef. AB,
well, let's get into his timeline real quick so you can speak on that some more. This is just some of the stuff that has happened in AB's career. 2018, he got into a very public disagreement with Big Ben while he was mm-hmm. still on the Steelers. That same year, he was sued for throwing furniture off his 14th floor apartment. In 2019, it was a situation with Brown's former trainer, Brittany Taylor, who accused him of sexual assault on three different occasions. In 2020, police in Hollywood, Florida were called to his residence following several domestic incidences. And in 2021, the fake vaccination card, and now the situation and what happened in New Jersey at MetLife. So, I mean, there's a lot there. There's a lot there.
At first, I thought his talent will always supersede. You know, we give an upteenth amount of second chances for people who are talented in the NFL.
Absolutely.
And AB is at the top of that list for a lot of people. But I think this is it. I think this is, he's done. He made his bed. He has to lie in it. I don't see any team. I mean, the Bengals used to be the team to pick up all the trash that was running around the NFL. I don't see any team willing to stick their neck out and give AB a chance just to catch some balls. Him in the locker room at this point in time is cancerous. And I don't like calling people cancer because I think that's dangerous territory to be in. But AB, as you said, has a track record, and you kind of have to believe who people tell you they are at the end of
what
the
about, day. What about the Rams? The Rams are looking to make a push for the Super Bowl. And obviously Robert Woods is no longer a part of the team because of injury for this season. Obviously Odell Beckham, but Odell was supposed to be wide receiver number two to Woods. Mm-hmm. So now they're, you know, down. DeSean Jackson didn't work out. He's in right. Vegas now. So they could use additional wide receiver help.
The Rams are fine.
Okay.
Cooper Kupp is in the MVP conversation. Odell Beckham is kind of like coming to his own now. They beat my Ravens at the last second. I can't stand the Rams now. Like, they're trying to win in the Hollywood way of just picking the pieces. They're trying to win like the Los Angeles Lakers are trying to win a championship, and we'll get to them later. But a big bunch of big names. But the defense is really. I mean, Von Miller stepped up. Listen, The Rams are not going to stick their neck out for Antonio Brown. I think the ownership is smarter than that. I think Sean McVay is smarter than that. They already have a Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey already punched his teammate in his face today. They have enough going on in that locker room. I don't think they need more of, I say Hollywood Brown, that's actually his cousin, but whatever it is that we're calling Antonio Brown after this fiasco, I don't think any team in the NFL at this point in time need that in their locker room.
Well, circling back to what you said before we close out, you know, where does Antonio Brown go from here? You said that, you know, this may be the final, you know, strike against him that kind of prevents him from entering to the Hall of Fame. But on the other side, we've seen people enter the Hall of Fame that have been accused of doing some things. I mean, we're mm-hmm. not going to name names. I think people know who we're referring to. So does that really make or does this really make or break that case for Antonio Brown?
I think the disrespect to the Shield and the teammates and the camaraderie of that locker room. I guess the Hall of Fame always talk about, that's when they were talking about keeping Terrell Owens out. The people mm-hmm. in the Hall of Fame, there was words and,
which is
and
a, rumors. Which was a travesty, right. by the way. Yeah, travesty.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's rumors that Terrell Owens wasn't welcome in the brotherhood that was the Hall of Fame. If Terrell Owens had a little stink on him, Antonio Brown spoiled milk. I'm telling you, he made everyone sick. He that milkshake was the same color, and everybody thought it was cool. And then they opened it up, had a taste, and now everybody's sick. Antonio Brown is spoiled milk for the NFL, and I don't think anyone. I'm trying to think if one of these broadcast talking head networks would even stick their neck out and give him an opportunity to speak. But listen, based off his music, I don't want to hear Antonio Brown talk either. Ashley, we have another old white college commentator, Kurt Herbstreit. For those who don't know, he pulled a classic back in my day over the weekend. During college game day, Herbstreit ripped college football players who chose to opt out of playing in, let's be honest, meaningless bowl games. I played football at Notre Dame, so I know a lot about playing in meaningless bowl games, so I have my thoughts. But what was your reaction to what Kurt Herbstreit said about college football players in this era not loving football?
I just can't stand these back in my day like type of takes. Like, it's like, back in my day we used to walk 5 miles to school with no right. Like, okay, that's great, we have cars now, grandpa, I don't care, you know what right. I mean, like, I don't need to do that. That doesn't mean that, like, you know, are more dedicated to your schooling than I am. It just means you didn't have the same technology that I had. Like, why are you like why options. Is that my problem, you know what I mean? Right. My problem with this is that coaches, first of all, have done this, you know, have put themselves first time and time again. And it's never like, oh, look what they did. You know, it's always like, oh, he's moving on to grander pastures and bigger opportunities. But when a player does it, it's almost like you feel like, how dare you? We gave you a scholarship to this school and a full ride, and you're playing for the so-and-so program. How dare you not have loyalty? First of all, I'm here because of my talent. You're reaping the benefits of my talent. Without my talent, this football program would not be as good. So let's not forget, it's a partnership. It's a relationship. And also, you know, all of these back in my day guys like to talk about how, you know, they need the players these days need to do it better than we did. And now it's different opportunities until they actually do it. And that's what upsets me, because it's a hypocrisy, right? Absolutely. It's, oh, you know, I'm all for, you know, the business of players getting theirs and, you know, taking, you know, their brands into their own hands until they actually do it. Not playing in the Fruit Loop or the Captain Crunch Bowl when your draft stock is potentially going to be affected is not you not loving the sport. It's you right. loving the sport enough and your longevity in it to make a smart decision. Like, absolutely. Unless you're playing in the big bowl games. And even then, if you don't feel like it's for you and you would rather not risk an injury that could potentially derail your entire career, then don't do it. It's not written in blood. When you sign a contract, when you don't even sign a contract, when you went to Notre Dame, did they ask you for your blood to sign on the dotted line? No. Like, you can change your mind. It's right. not a blood deal. It's not, you know, I have to give you my firstborn child. It's not written in stone. Like, it's crazy to me that you equate making a decision that's good for you and your family and your longevity and your health with not loving the sport. It's such like an archaic, just asinine way of thinking. And I'm tired of like hearing about it.
Yeah, it's an old take from Kurt Herbstreit, even. He's back in 2016. He said the same thing when Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette decided to opt out of their nothing bowl games, whatever.
And they're doing just fine. Leonard Fournette has a Super Bowl ring, so.
Exactly, doing just fine. So here's my thing. I think there's a lot of layers to this. Kurt Herbstreit is obviously just protecting the hostage situation that college football is under with ESPN right now. They want the biggest names to play in the biggest games. And at the end of the day, those players are looking for something bigger. Those players are looking at the NFL. They want to go play in their dream situation. Kurt Herbstreit's dream situation was college football. He loves college football apparently so much that he thinks that opting out of a bowl game is selling your mother for goods. Like it's not the same situation at all. I don't like the fact that players are made out to be bad guys when they're making the best decisions for themselves. And that's just as simple. And it feels racial because it's usually always a white guy saying, black guy, why aren't you playing? And I don't step into that territory. But it's not the situation that NFL players are in. It's not the situation. But the take just puts college football players in a bad light for making the best decision for them. We talked about it earlier in the prep meeting. Jalen Smith, one of your Cowboy draft picks in the second round after he messed up his knee playing against Ohio State in the bowl game. Everyone wants to be rah, rah, rah. Everyone doesn't think that this college football game is the be-all, end-all because it's not the be-all, end-all. It can't be. And all these other coaches, like you made mention of, move whenever the hell they want to move. And it bowl game season is for college football coaches to make the most money possible. All the bonuses are wrapped up in winning bowl games for big-time college football coaches. Players have no incentive to play in these games or to make big splashes in these games. And let's be real, all the college football players that need to play in bowl games to up their draft stock play in bowl games. All the college football players that don't play in football games because they don't need to, don't. The majority of them don't. I mean, Joe Burrow's a different outlier because obviously he is who he thought he was by the grade of game he had in his national championship game in LSU. But if he opted out of that game and then still did what he's doing right in the NFL, I don't think anyone talks about it.
Right. And before I make my point, let me go ahead and read his full quote. So if everyone doesn't know it, you know, now you have that background knowledge. He says, and I quote, "I just don't understand. If you don't make it to the playoff, how is it meaningless to play football and compete? Isn't that what we do as football players? We compete. I don't know if expanding the playoff is going to change anything. I think this era of player just doesn't love football." There's so many just things wrong with that statement.
So many things wrong with that.
It's like, you don't love football if you make a decision that's good for your longevity in football. Like, how does that make sense? You know what I mean? It's not like you're opting. It'd be different if you're opting out of the bowl game to like go to the beach. You know what I mean? These guys are opting out of bowl games and meaningless bowl games at that most of the time. Now there are guys who opt out of the big bowl games and that's, you know, they're right as well. But especially when it comes to the meaningless ones, they're opting out of it because they're not trying to risk their longevity in football. It's not like they're just doing it for the fun of it. So it's like, isn't that the definition of loving something, is wanting to be in it for the long haul and the long term, not just thinking in what's in front of you, but thinking what's beyond you? Like, let's say you're playing in the Cap'n Crunch Bowl and you break your leg and you were expected to be drafted. That could go ahead and change the entire trajectory of your life. And now what? Oh, I have to break my leg in a meaningless bowl game to prove to you, Kirk, that I love the game of football? Like, come on. That's so ridiculous and just so egotistical and narcissistic. I just can't stand it. I can't stand it.
It's not that these college football players don't love football. They do love their families more. Okay, they do love their brands maybe slightly more, but it's always connected to football. I think Tom Brady has really shown the power of giving your all to football. Like, the reason I'm talking professionally right now instead of playing football professionally is I was like, I don't know if I want to give my all to this whole thing. Like, I don't know if I'm going to put all my eggs in one basket. I want to kind of be landing on my feet. So I think these players are trying to set up their families for long, not only themselves as football players. They want to generationally change the wealth in their family, and they can do it by protecting their bodies for the games that actually matter, which are the NFL ones. Ja'Marr Chase set out the entire 2020 season, and he set a record for rookie receiving yards this weekend.
And I also would be curious to know, Kirk, if you feel that coaches who leave don't love football. I mean, somebody that you probably know, Brian Kelly, left before a bowl game and went to LSU. You look at Mario Cristobal, left Oregon for Miami. You look at Lincoln Riley, leaves Oklahoma for USC before a bowl game. And there's no type of, you know, backlash or chastising of, oh, these coaches don't love coaching. They don't love football. Right. They just left. Oh my gosh, like the audacity. I can't. They don't love. No, what you say is, oh, well, they made a good business decision. That's a whole lot of money. They're going to a better program. It's like, if that's how you feel, that abandoning something because there's a better opportunity to you is you not loving something, cool. But I just ask that you keep that same energy across the board. Don't flip-flop when it's, you know, beneficial to your point or to your logic. Because if that's how you feel, that's how you should feel about everything. But you pick and choose, and that's why I don't respect it.
For all of you who don't know, Ashley Nicole Moss is an insane Cowboys fan, and her Stars lost to the Cardinals over the weekend, and she is not too happy about it, especially because with snapping the Cowboys' four-game winning streak, Dak Prescott hate is back. Tim Kalishaw of the Dallas Morning News this morning wrote, "Confidence in Prescott and the Cowboys' scoring ability has hit a new low." Ashley, I'm going to clear out here for now as you try and take down the Dak haters. Tell me how you're feeling.
Okay, so first of all, it'd be your own people because the Dallas Morning News coming out after their very own is ugly. Jeez, if you are not safe from the Dallas press as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, then it's over for the rest of us. But I think here's the thing. I think the Cowboys aren't used to having a functional defense, but not only functional, but really, really good. I mean, this is probably the best Dallas defense I've seen in years. I mean, shout out to Dan Quinn. He's doing an incredible job. Yes. And I think because of that, it has taken some of the pressure off of the offense to constantly have to put up points, right? Because you know that if you go three and out, your defense is going to hold on the four and get you that ball back. Whereas in past seasons, you know, Dak knows if I don't score on every single drive or possession rather, or at least try to, we're probably going to lose this game. So I think because you now have the safety net of the defense, they're more lax, but they're a little bit too lax. I think there's a few situations. One, I think Mike McCartney, a lot of times getting out coach, whether it's, you know, in time management, whether it's knowing when to use a timeout, when to challenge or when not to. I think that, you know, the offensive schemes are just very lax. I think they're very predictable. I don't think there's any creativity there. I think it's easy to defend. And also Dak's decision-making is just off. I don't know if that's because he is still getting adjusted. Remember, Dak came back after his injury and it was like nothing ever happened. I don't know if that's finally starting to settle in a little bit. And now he's a little bit more conscious of the fact that there was an injury and maybe of the fact that he has to play a little bit differently. I don't know if that's starting to get into his head more. I'm not sure. I can't really speak on that. But I will say that sometimes subconsciously quarterbacks, when they have a safety net of a really, really good defense, offensively, they take a couple steps back and you can see it. You know, his decision making is not as quick. He's throwing balls that he shouldn't be throwing. I mean, dead into traffic. It's not just him. I think a lot of the schemes are not, you know, conducive for what this offense looks like right now. But I do think, you know, defense still wins championships, but I think people forget the other side of that. Your offense still needs to be able to score. And, you know, putting up 56 points against the Washington football team is great, but it's the Washington football team. You have to be able to do that, or at least a remnant of that against a really good football team like the Arizona Cardinals, like the Tampa Bay Bucks, like the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you can't, that's a problem because those are the teams that you're going to see in the postseason. You're not going to see the New York Giants and the Washington football team in the postseason. They won't be there. So if you want to be there for the long term, you got to know how to play that same style of football against really good football teams. And right now we haven't been seeing that.
No. And I mean, you touched on one great point of Mike McCarthy losing football games and being outcoached. He do be doing that. Okay. You see this a lot. You talk about leaning on the complimentary football. Everyone talks about it. John Harbaugh's favorite word, complimentary football.
It's one of mine too, by the way. It's one of my favorite phrases. That and complimentary basketball. It's right, one of my favorite phrases. Yeah.
Complimentary. But he's got Michael Parsons over there. Right. Possible defensive player of the year. He's got Trayvon Diggs, who I don't have to tell you because you watch the games. He lets up a lot. Almost as much as he takes away. Like he's a liability at times because, you know, the home run hitters at corner, they're usually intercepting the ball or, you know, letting something go over their head for a touchdown. So you're right with that. Here's the problem, because quarterbacks will always get hate. That comes with the job, right? It just comes with it. The problem is who we think Dak Prescott is. He's a great leader. He's a very, very talented quarterback. But he is not elite. I'm sorry to say it. And I know
we're not doing this, Brandon.
We're going to do it right now. We're going to do it right now.
We can go into the gulag right now.
Ashley, I'm trying to tell you, top five quarterbacks. I know preseason you said he's top five, and I feel that energy, and he's showing that. But in all reality, we can think of 4 to 5 quarterbacks more consistent, more successful, have the receipts that are better than Dak Prescott. And he needs everyone else to sit around with him. But you guys need, your team, you guys need the running game to be successful. And you just don't see that from elite quarterbacks. Like Aaron Rodgers could have whoever the fuck out there, and the Packers are going to be in every game, if not blowing out every game. But I just don't, it's not Dak Prescott's fault, but I think we have to be realistic of who Rain Prescott is.
Well, I think, you know, the Cowboys being a run heavy offense is not necessary. It's what it's always been, right? They are known for that impeccable offensive line, and it's been the case since like the 90s. That's just what they are known for. And it's the style of constructing your offense that a lot of other teams have tried to mimic and have tried to follow, because it protects your quarterback for the long term. And also it's effective. You know, defenses get exhausted trying to constantly stop the run, and you break them down easier. So I don't know if that necessarily is a strike against Dak, because that's just the construction of the Dallas Cowboys as a football team.
True.
But I will say that, you know, I can understand the argument. And before I get into that point, Jerry Jones, you know, they asked him about the quote unquote slump. And he said, I don't want to say it's a slump, but that's probably fair. It's such a multifaceted evaluation. I would say that our offense is definitely away where we were 5 to 6 weeks ago, which is true. 5 to 6 weeks ago, they came out explosive. Dak, it was like that, you know, the situation where he fractured his ankle never happened. And it was like, this guy didn't have a preseason. Holy crap. Like, he looks incredible. Right. Like, who is this guy? This is not the Dak Prescott that we thought we were going to get after no preseason and coming off of a terrible injury. They looked really, really good. The offense was explosive. The defense was clicking. I mean, this looked like a team that was going to go all the way. This is like a team that you could not stop. The defense has continued that trajectory, and the offense has slipped. Now, there's a lot of things that go into that. Obviously, we spoke about a bunch of them. It's the play calling. It's the clock management. It's the coaching. But then, you know, a lot of eyes are on Dak. And that's why I hate stat lines, because if you look at stat lines, he played phenomenally. It was a great game. But if you watch the game and you watch the intricate details, for me, it's not the ability that I'm concerned about. The decision-making is off. There's decision-making is not as sharp as it was earlier in the season. And I don't know if that's because it's all the noise of, oh, there's a slump and the offense is getting outplayed by the defense. And that's in your head as you're trying to focus and run the ship of the offense. And it's causing you to do more than what you need to do. We saw the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. Remember earlier in the season, Patrick Mahomes, and his is the opposite issue, because they don't really have much of a defense. But Patrick Mahomes was trying to do so many different things, and he was throwing balls into traffic, and he was forcing passes to receivers that weren't open, and he would run I'm seeing the same type of play from Dak, a lot of unnecessary things, when all he has to do is simplify it and play his game, and he's not doing that. And that's what's concerning.
back to the basics. And that's what the biggest thing was. Even when Dak replaced Tony Romo, everyone at the end of that season was like, well, they're going to get into the film room and they're going to figure out how to contain Dak Prescott. When Dak Prescott isn't thinking about the big things, he is amazing. He is so good, one of the best quarterbacks. And just to be clear, I'm always going to root for every black quarterback to do fantastic and great things in the NFL.
What Issa Rae say? I'm just here rooting for everyone black.
Hey, I'm rooting for everybody black. I'm rooting for everybody black. Coaches, especially quarterbacks. But yeah, I do think that the Cowboys, I was with you. I thought Cowboys were headed to the Super Bowl.
Hey, we're still headed to the Super Bowl if you ask me. Okay?
I'll say they're not out. They're not out yet. But if you can't beat the winner of the NFC East last year, the Washington football teams, and they're decimated by being the Washington football team, I do think that losses at the end of the season help teams kind of like rejigger what they need to do and be more polished. But I want to see Prescott in the NFC Championship game. I want to see him play in the Super Bowl in Los Angeles this year. But there are a lot of things, a lot of patches to clean up on defense. And obviously, Dak needs to stop putting the ball on the ground. That's my biggest thing. He gives the ball to the other team too much. If it's an interception, it's not a bunch of interceptions. But when he gets out of the pocket, he gets the ball punched out. He got them big-ass muscles. He can't really tuck the football the way he's supposed to tuck it.
His legs are huge. Yeah.
Big-ass thighs.
Yeah. Yeah, his legs are huge. I think, you know, for me, I don't really, and this could be, you know, I'm the competitor in me and slight pessimist. I don't really give credit to teams for beating teams that they should beat. You know, the Washington football team, you're supposed to beat them. They're not a good football team. I'm sorry to all the fans out here. They're not a good football team. I give credit when you beat the teams you're technically not supposed to, the more elite. And Arizona, look, for all of their shortcomings in terms of the things that they have lost this season, the players that they have lost this season, that is still a really good football team. So for me, that was a statement game that you beat them, whether or not they're missing one or two guys, that's still a good team. They showed that on Sunday night, but that's still a team that you should be able to beat when you're at full strength. So I think moving forward, especially when you start getting into the playoffs, those are the good teams. There's no more, this is going to be an right. easy, there's no more easy win. Now you're facing the best of the best. And, you know, it's going to be interesting what that Eagles and Cowboys game looks like, because that could possibly be a team that you got to see again now that they're unfortunately in the playoffs. It was
clinched.
The Vikings can't do anything right. See, that's what Kirk Cousins gets for not, you know, that's a different conversation. You know, I'm not even going to get into that. But you know what? The Vikings had one job for me, one job, and they couldn't even do it. I'm done with them. I'm done with them. I can't. All right, Brandon. So you gave me smoke about my Cowboys. All right. So now we're going to flip the script on you a little bit. And we're going to talk about your Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James. Okay. So now, despite the flashy numbers that LeBron has been putting up these past few games, and look, he's been holding down the fort the best of his ability. Happy belated birthday, LeBron. 37 years old, 19 seasons in the NBA. Despite all of that, the Lakers just don't look good. They just look like a bad team. Now, I actually tweeted at the beginning of the season that I don't think the Lakers are going to finish top three in the West. People came at me crazy, like they like to do on Twitter for whatever reason. Yes. People, you know, like to come at me crazy, but that's cool. I'm from New York. I can deal with the smoke. Listen, it is what it is. But now that we're kind of halfway through the season, what is your takeaway from what you have seen from your beloved Lakers thus far? Don't cry. If you need a tissue, we'll get that sent to you.
I'll try not to cry. Listen, I was not a fan of a lot of those moves that were made in the offseason. I love Carmelo Anthony.
Me too.
As much as I love Carmelo Anthony, as much as I want him to win a ring, I am terrified to say anything bad about Russell Westbrook, but we're here to talk, so I'm going to let you know.
Why are you terrified? You feel like he's going to come after you? Or
I've seen him in person too many times, like – randomly, so like I think if I talk shit, I'm definitely going.
We'll start off with something nice, Brody. I absolutely love the way you dress. I don't care what anyone else says. I think you are fly as hell. Okay, now go.
Yes, king fashion. Stop giving this motherfucker the ball. No, keep him on the bench. I don't know how to say this. LeBron James at the five position has been wonderful for the Lakers, but they stink and they're not good. But this is typical with LeBron James teams before the trade deadline. You go all in on LeBron James. You let him figure it out. You let him be the Jackie Moon, shout out to semi-pro, player coach, all the stuff.
I'm going to tell my kids that Klay Thompson was Jackie Moon. I'm going to see if they, when they're old enough, yes, if they know the difference. I'm going to play semi-pro and be like, you guys know this is Klay Thompson? Is it Klay Thompson?
You talking about the West. I'm terrified for Klay Thompson to come back. But listen, I think the Lakers are right where they should be based on that roster and based on how Anthony Davis can't stay on the court. I mean, it's simple as that. I loved the bubble championship because that was the last time that we could legitimately win one. You know, Tyler Hero played out of his mind in the bubble. It was just a weird, different world that we got a chance to. LeBron got his championship in the bubble. No one's going to have an asterisk on that. But the rest of these seasons,
I wouldn't know. The Knicks weren't invited, so we didn't get that invite. It got lost in the mail, apparently. Yeah, it got lost in the mail, apparently. We didn't even get an opportunity. But that's cool. Whatever. Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
All I have to say is the Lakers are right where they're supposed to be. They're not the best team in the West. They're not the worst team in the West. They're in the position where they're beating a lot of teams that they're supposed to beat, and they're losing a lot of teams that they're supposed to lose to. I mean, you can be as close as you want to the Grizzlies, but they have a better team.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if LeBron James is your only go-to, listen, we're not going to come back from games with LeBron James shooting three. I love that he can shoot. I love that he's taking all the things. He's elite in all the different categories, but he can't be the only person on your team because he's LeBron James. He always needed somebody else, and we just don't know who that other person is on this team. We don't know. I don't know what their big three that came out 360, AD number three, LeBron number six, Russell Westbrook number zero. Like, no one's going to win with that. We can't even move Russell Westbrook. My thing is, I don't know who comes. Do we get Kyle Kuzma back?
Kyle Kuzma don't want to come back. Kyle Kuzma is chilling in D.C. He's flourishing. He's hitting buzzer beaters. He's hitting clutch shots. He's having a moment. Yeah, he's exactly. Cool. He's cool.
So I just don't see... I think this is perfect. This is L.A. drama, right? This follows LeBron. I think that he will be better than a play-in game. I think they're going to win the first round of the playoffs, regardless of who they play. I want to see what the roster moves are after the trade deadline. And I honestly do think that Rob Pelinka has something against LeBron James. I just do. I think he does.
You know, I think it's interesting because Westbrook, I mean, if you look at, you know, this was him Sunday night versus the Timberwolves, it was 108-103 win. But I mean, 20 points, 9 turnovers, shot 0 from 5 from the 3-point range. You know, here's the thing with Westbrook, right? I'm a huge Westbrook fan, have always been a huge fan of him. I think people are now saying what they're saying about him, not because his style of play has changed. I think everyone's just now noticing it more. You know what I mean? Because here's the thing. He's always been the same player. It's just now that it's basically like the story of the scorpion and the frog. This is one of my favorite stories of all time because it's such a deep story. Long story short, the scorpion asks the frog to take him across the lake. And when he gets to the end of the lake, the scorpion stings the frog and the frog dies. And he says, "Why did you sting me, scorpion?" As the frog's dying, he says, "Because I'm a scorpion and that's what I do." Russell Westbrook has always been the same player. For you to get him on the Lakers and expect him to miraculously flip a light switch and be someone different is the mistake of the Lakers. You knew what kind of guy you were getting. You knew that he chucked up a lot of crazy shots. You knew sometimes, you know, he was going to give you a lot of turnovers. He works hella hard. He's one of the hardest workers, I think, in the league. He beats himself up more than anybody can beat himself up. He loves the game of basketball. You've never heard about him being a bad teammate. You know, even with the situation with KD and Westbrook, when that happened in OKC, I don't remember ever hearing, you know, Russ say anything bad about Kevin Durant. No. He there's a lot of good about him, but I think people expected him to be something different when he got to LA. And that's everyone else's mistake because he already showed you what kind of player he was. So for me, I just feel like, you know, LeBron constructed this team. Obviously, he couldn't okay it himself. That had to come from the higher ups, but this is what he wanted. So now you're kind of stuck because you can't move Westbrook. You can't move him. He makes far too much money and no one's going to pick up that contract. Nobody's going to pick him up. You might be able to move some of the smaller pieces on your team. You saw that they move Rondo and things like that.
Right.
You might be able to move some of the smaller pieces in hopes that you can get somebody who can help fill the gap of AD and Russell Westbrook's shortcomings. But at the end of it, what this team is what you're going to deal with for the rest of the season. You're really not going to see a different team. This is just the team that you have. And
I don't want to, we're supposed to end with that point. I can't let you say that. I can't let you say that this is going to be the same team. This is a team that steps into the Family Matters when Urkel turns into Stefan. Like, we are going to
Lakers. I say the roster is going to be the same. You're not going to see much changes to the roster. Now, if they go ahead and they're able to figure it out, and by April and May, you see a drastically better team, that's always a possibility. But roster wise, you're not seeing much changes to that after the deadline. It's just, I just don't see it happening. I just don't.
As soon as we didn't sign Alex Caruso, there was seemed to be some sabotaging going on.
Oh, that's all white chocolate is flourishing in Chicago. Leave him alone.
So, Ashley, in a departure from her role as assistant coach with the San Antonio Spurs, in a return to her former franchise, we all know we're talking about,
yeah,
Becky Hammon has reportedly landed a head coaching job with the Las Vegas Aces. Woo! After interviewing with various NBA head coaching jobs the past few seasons, many are calling this move a downgrade from her current position. Ashley, what do you make of the move? And what do you think this says about where the WNBA is headed?
It's a downgrade. Why? Because it's the WNBA. You know what? Okay, here we go. I'm going on a mini rant because I'm tired of hearing this banter. I'm tired of hearing this rhetoric.
Go off, queen.
The WNBA is not a stepping stone. It is not a downgrade. It is not a path you take to get ultimately to where you actually want to be. The WNBA, especially a head coaching position within the WNBA, is a legitimate job. It is a job that so many people would kill for. It is a legitimate head coaching position. It's not, you know, a consolation prize. It's not, you know, it's because she couldn't be in the NBA. It's not any of that. She is a head coach, period. I don't care if it's in the WNBA. This is the problem. People still are in this mindset that the WNBA is not a real league, that the WNBA players are not real basketball players. And that just goes to show that they have not been paying attention. If you've watched the WNBA, whether this season, past seasons, or, you know, since the beginning of its construction, you would know that these are legitimate ball players. Some of the ball players within the WNBA can school some of your favorite players in the NBA. They're not out there dunking the ball. They're not there doing all those crazy trick shots. Yes, I'll give you that. But they're playing the fundamentals of basketball. They're playing true logistical basketball, and it's brilliant. And if you want your son or your daughter to understand the true fundamentals of the game, you take them to a WNBA game. Becky, let's just run through her resume real quick. She spent 16 seasons in the WNBA. 16 seasons. That is more experience than Steve Nash has as a head coach. That's more experience than Chauncey Billups has as a head coach. I mean, why is it that we give credit to players who have now obtained coaching positions when they really haven't done the work? Listen, I'm not knocking it, but it, again, keep that same energy. I mean, she also was the first full-time female assistant coach in the NBA with the Spurs. If you ask me, the Spurs 100% dropped the ball with letting her go.
Yeah,
that's a different conversation. Yeah,
we can do a pop.
We gotta stop doing this. Gotta stop doing this. You know, it's a stepping stone. It's a downgrade.
Right.
It's not a downgrade. And just correcting what I said, she spent 16 seasons in the WNBA as a player. Not more experience than Steve Nash and Chauncey Billups have had as a player. But right, she certainly has more experience from a coaching standpoint than both of those guys.
Absolutely. And let's for the Kurt Herbstreets of the world who are listening to this, back in my day, 25 years ago, the WNBA just finished their 25th season. At the beginning, maybe this was seen as a step down, or maybe it was a downgrade for the first woman assistant head coach in the NBA to go to the WNBA and coach her own team. But that's not the world we live in. It's 2022, right? The WNBA is a popular, reputable, respected sports franchise. It's just as simple as that. You open up your sports betting app if you're in the right city, and you can bet on the WNBA game. We're not talking about Chuck E. Cheese or a rec league game or a church league that people get together. Like, this is the Las Vegas Aces, like one of the best teams in the WNBA. The biggest fault here, in my opinion, is the NBA, not even the Spurs, the NBA as a whole, understanding their talent in the coaching realm. And I people throw around the term token, and she can be that if she was the only one who was doing it to her, the best of her ability. She's coached NBA games. She coached more, like, to your point, she coached more NBA games than Steve Nash did when he got the job to coach the Brooklyn Nets and AD and Kyrie Irving.
And she didn't just coach anyone's team. She coached Greg Popovich's San Antonio Spurs. And when you say coaches, there are tiers. And Popovich is the upper echelon of coaches in the NBA. So for him to entrust her with head coaching in his absence, for anybody to say, oh, it's a step down or it's a de-, she clearly knows what she's. And the only reason that she is not in the NBA, I feel, is because of the lack of opportunity. I don't think there's any head coach vacancies right now.
Yeah.
But I 110% believe that if anybody can make that transition and break that ceiling, it's her. She's that good of a coach. And anybody who argues that has no idea what they're talking about.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. I think she is a star in her own right. I mean, it was like she's replacing Bill Laimbeer, who, from my perspective, from my vantage point, when Bill Laimbeer started coaching in WNBA, I don't know if this is like backwards. That's when I started paying attention on a real, real level. I was like, oh, what? The NBA, Bill Laimbeer, the Bad Boy Pistons, he's coaching in the WNBA. Okay, let me check these.
Detroit basketball. I mean,
Candace Parker is one of my favorite basketball players ever. She has brought so much. Like, Becky Hammon is the Candace Parker of the coaching realm, in my opinion, of just like the star in the making. And obviously they have all the pieces in Las Vegas to continue to ascend. But I don't even know, for the people who don't think that this is a step up for her, I don't know how many games she can win for them to really justify.
Right.
They can win a championship and they'll still say that Becky Hammon took a step down, taking the job as the head coach of the Aces.
It's the same people who praise and idolize LeBron for making good on his promise to bring a championship back to Cleveland, which, listen, godlike, king-like,
he did
more things. Power to him.
Right.
But you know who also did that? Candace Parker. So what's good for the goose in this situation is good for the gander. So, like, if you're going to keep that same energy and you're going to and idolize and praise LeBron for it, keep that same energy for Candace Parker. She made good on her promise to bring Chicago a championship. Mm. And what did she do? She brought them a championship in the year she said she was going to do it. So it's this double standard that drives me nuts, because it's like, as long as it happens in the NBA, there's always an excuse or a justification or it's a celebration. But when the WNBA does the same thing or there's similar storylines, there's always an excuse as to why it's not the same or why it's not as good. Right. If you don't respect the W, you just say you don't like basketball. Like, it's really that simple. Ooh, like, just say you don't like it.
Yeah.
I have more respect for you if you just say, oh, I don't really know much about ball. I don't really like it. That's why I don't respect the W. Like, just...
That's basically what you're saying. You can't like basketball, watch the WNBA, and it's like, this shit's trash. Like,
right. Not, like, there's, and there's, if you do, you don't know what you're talking about. Exactly. It's really that simple. All right. So you know what that sound means. It is time for Buzzer Beaters, where we talk about stories that we did not cover in the show because of time. And Brandon, I know you got a lot on your chest, so I'm gonna let you go first. Go ahead.
The honeymoon period for Marcus Freeman, a Notre Dame head football coach, is officially over. Notre Dame lost in the Fiesta Bowl in embarrassing fashion to Mike Gundy, who just took his mullet off and was wearing an OAN t-shirt at the beginning of the season. Don't get me started. Okay, we lost again in a major bowl game. This is 0-10 that we Notre Dame. I play football at Notre Dame. That we lost, and I think, like I said, the honeymoon period is over. I think it's time to clean house for Marcus Freeman. It's not about keeping the guys around that were good for the morale. It's about building your football team and getting elite athletes on your squad. You know the reason why Brian Kelly left Notre Dame for LSU? Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson. It's just those names, those big elite talent that will go to an LSU versus the big elite talent that will go to Notre Dame. Don't get me started with him and fucking Bengals. Anyways, I don't even know if I had a rant. I'm very, very upset. Notre Dame lost again in a major bowl game in a very embarrassing fashion. I guess this time it hurts even worse because the second black head coach in Notre Dame football history was there for his first game. So, and they didn't make any halftime adjustments. No points in half. Listen, I go on and on and on. Notre Dame sucks right now, but we will rebuild. And I do think the future is bright behind Marcus Freeman.
What is it? The Fighting Irish? Fight on? Will fight on to live another day. Well, look, you know, I didn't play college football, but I am an avid Knicks fan and diehard. Thanks, Dad, for putting that pressure on me and that bane of my existence on me for my entire life. There's a lot of other teams I could have been a fan of that would have brought me less stress, but here I am. And the Julius Randle scapegoat conversation that has overtaken Knicks Twitter is now a moot point because the Knicks are 0-2 without him. And look, this is not to say, first and foremost, let me double back for a second. Fans who celebrate their players being in protocol, you guys are trash. Okay.
Oh my God.
Trash.
Garbage.
At the end of the day, these men and women are still humans before their players. Have some respect. Have some decency. Who raised you? Obviously, they didn't do a good job. Man. So Julius Randle, I'm not going to sit here and say he does not have his shortcomings. I'm not going to sit here. He does not say he does not have things he can improve on. Sometimes his attitude is a little wonky. Sometimes, you know, his ball handling is a little wonky. Sometimes his decision-making is a little wonky. But let's not sit here and pretend, Knicks fans, okay, that he is the sole reason that this team is not playing well. And if the past two games without Julius Randle did not prove that, I don't know what will. So now that you're without your scapegoat, now what? Now whose fault is it? My thing is like, I am not somebody who makes decisions or gives takes an emotion. I'm a logical person. Okay. And a lot of the Knicks fan base tends to be overly emotional. And I get it. Really? Look, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, New Yorkers, they're emotional. We're emotional. We don't. You know, it's been a long time since we've had a good Knicks team, and we're not trying to go back to the dark ages. It was a dark, dark time.
Bing bong.
Gotta be. Yeah, don't. That's a curse. We don't. That's a curse. Add it to the level of curse. Bing bong's out now. It's like it's a curse. It was cool for four games, and now it's dead. My thing is simply watch the games, understand the logistics of what you're watching. And don't speak in emotion, because then if you don't speak in emotion, you can understand that the laundry list of problems are bigger than Julius Randle. And let's not forget the same guy who, if it weren't for him and Derrick Rose, that playoff experience would never have happened. So I understand players, you know, they vary from season to season. Sometimes you're not always going to get a good season. Sometimes shooting percentages go down. Sometimes, you know, his style changes. You know, you're not going to get that same energy you got last. And I'm not excusing the lack of the things that he's been bringing to the table, but he's not the sole problem. So let's just keep that in there. That's all I'm saying.
I think y'all have some bad juju since Tom Tibbs took Coach of the Year from Monty Williams last year.
No, we got some bad juju when everybody and their mama started bing-bonging us to death without knowing what it meant. Okay? Bing bong. Half the people bing-bong and don't even know what a bing-bong is.
Ain't been on the subway.
Yeah. Ain't never been on a subway. Couldn't tell the difference from the B line to the D line to the C line, but they got all that. All of a sudden, they bing bonging us to death. I just can't. Lack of creativity from the social teams of opposing teams. You guys should be ashamed of yourselves. Ashamed.
All right, guys, that's it for us. Follow and subscribe to Take Line on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to Take Line Show on YouTube for exclusive video clips from this episode, plus Jason's digital series, All Caps NBA, which airs every Friday. Thank you for letting us fill in this week. Ashley, where can the people find you?
All right, so you guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Ash Nicole Moss, and that's the same handle on both. really exciting stuff coming to you guys in the new year. The second season of my show, Laces Out, should be dropping, or we should start filming that soon. So I'm excited to get that out to you. Also, some cool stuff in the works. Obviously, Super Bowl, All-Star, be out there and make sure you guys are following me on social to get all the behind the scenes and the first to know of all that good stuff. But Brandon, where can the good people find you as well?
You can find me at BrotherBrandon_ on Twitter. Just Brother Brandon. That's where I'm coming from. If you guys aren't following Ashley Nicole Moss, y'all sleep. Y'all can catch up when y'all need to.
Likewise.
You
know what I'm saying?
Laces Out is the dopest shit that Sports Illustrated has done in a very, very long time. Aww. So shouts out to you. Shouts out to them. I've been here with greatness with everybody here, and I appreciate it. But at Brother Brandon.
I like that. At Brother Brandon. That's a cool name.
At Brother Brandon.
Cool handle.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Jason and Renee will be back next week. Love y'all. Peace.
Take Line is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Carlton Gillespie and Zuri Irvin. Our executive producers are myself and Sandy Gerard. Our contributing producers are Caroline Reston, Elijah Cohn, and Jason Gallagher. Engineering, editing, and sound design by Sarah Gibble-Laska and the folks at Chapter 4. And our theme music is produced by Brian Vasquez.